Backchat Studios is a part of the Acast Creator Network. Head to backchatpodcast.com.au to sign up as a patron and access all of our merch.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All right, back to our basketball show, back again with another episode, one that people thought said wouldn't happen because of so much Twitter beef between me and the person that you're about to hear from. Backchat underscore basketball on Instagram is where you can get in touch with us, or hello at backchatpodcast.com.au. You can email us there as well. Whatever you want to email us, we'll probably read it out. Let's get straight into it. Shane Heal is our guest today. Shane, thanks for coming on and chatting to me. People, you know, they've highlighted you and I going back and forth on Twitter a little bit, and they thought, hey, they're not on speaking terms, but no. Obviously, I'm being a bit facetious. Thanks for coming on.
Well, you're not the Lone Ranger, so nothing special about that. But no, all good. Good to be on, and always nice to be able to have some different thoughts on Twitter, that's for sure.
That's right. I do appreciate that about you, that you do, that you're happy to go back and have a chat with people. It's not just a one-way street. So, no, that's good. Let's get into a few things, NBL, NBA. But firstly, before we do that, every sort of back chat guest that we have on the other show that I'm a part of, we ask for their greatest sporting achievement. So, obviously, you've done a lot of good things in the basketball world. You represented your country. You're a champion. You've coached. You've done just about everything. But I'm going to put some rules on this. You can't talk about basketball. So, anything that you've done outside of the basketball court, I want to hear about. So, your greatest sporting thing that you can hang your hat on off the basketball court.
I mean, probably being a dad. You know, for me, having three beautiful daughters, I'm very, very fortunate to have, and all great kids, and all really close to all of them, a big part of their lives. So, I think anyone that becomes a dad, it's a special time, and you sort of can't compare that to anything else you do in your life, I don't think.
Yeah, yeah. I've got two kids as well. I'd still say for me, it's bowling 5 for 16 in the under-12s cricket grand final. But
okay.
No, I'm joking.
Sure, they'll appreciate that as you get older.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they'll learn how good that is. Don't worry. Let's get actually, firstly, are you a Geelong fan? Is that right?
I am.
Yeah. So how are you feeling at the moment?
Nervous.
Nervous.
Yeah, hasn't been a great start for the Cats, has it?
And, no.
That first half against Hawthorn, I was sitting there just saying, oh, my goodness, this is going to be a bad year. And then we turned it on, but still some worrying signs, I would think. But
yeah.
Had a pretty good run. You know, yeah. I had no choice growing up. My dad said, you either barrack for Geelong or you get out. And so it was family tradition, and had some good times.
Are you a Geelong boy?
No, I'm not. No, I grew up in Victoria, but my grandparents grew up in Geelong, so that's where the history comes from, and played 3 years for the Supercats. So that was nice to be down there amongst it all, when I got to know the players and did a lot of promos, and we'd go to each other's games and all the rest of it. So good memories.
I'm an Eagles fan, so I was secretly hoping that Geelong would demolish the Hawks, because I didn't want the Eagles to be the first people to like really just cop it from Geelong. So I'm hoping that they got that sort of out of their system, and that the West Coast can sort of at least be sort of competitive with them, which, look, to be honest, it's probably not going to happen. But, you know.
I love the fact you're optimistic, looking for something.
Yeah. The thing I've got is that it's in Adelaide. So it's not Cardinia Park. It's not down Geelong, where we just have absolutely no hope. Adelaide is at least some sort of neutral ground. All right, NBA. So currently the play-in tournament is happening. Firstly, what's your thoughts on a play-in tournament for playoff seeding?
I like it. You know, I think we've already seen it work, for the fact that teams just stopped tanking a bit earlier, or some of them anyway. And, you look at OKC, but they just hung in there, trying to make it. And I love their philosophy. but they just wanted to win as much as they possibly could for this young team. So, you know, I think it's a good thing. And I thought we saw it work in the NBL as well to keep teams alive, like the Perth Wildcats, who were just desperate to try and hang on to some sort of, you know, playoff hopes. And, you know, I think it's a good theory.
Yeah, we'll get to the Wildcats and figure out, like, if you absolutely despise them or you hate Perth or what your situation with your relationship with Perth is. With the NBA, so I'm a Mavs fan, and that's been really difficult the last decade. But, you know, 2011, they won the championship, and I'm still holding on to that as much as I can because everything after that's been pretty brutal. What's your take on the Luka Doncic and Kyrie Irving situation there?
Well, I just thought it was a bad trade to start with. You know, it was never going to work. You know, I thought Dallas were a little bit smarter than that and had a little bit more foresight about what they were going to try and do. And, yeah, so, I mean, it's been a disaster, really. And, you know, I think they got what they probably deserved by making that trade.
Yeah, it's been hard. I'm an optimist mostly with the teams that I go for, and I still keep thinking like it's going to turn around, and then, you know, before you know it, the Mavs are just openly tanking, and now the NBA are investigating their movements towards the end of the season. So look, they had to keep that number 10 pick that they're holding on to, otherwise it goes to the Knicks. So I get the tanking, but to have Luka and Kyrie and you're tanking at the end of the year is just such a weird concept and brutal to watch. Who's do you have an NBA team that you sort of have a soft spot for that you follow?
Not really. I mean, I love Joey Ingles, and, you know, seeing him at Milwaukee now I think is a great thing. And, you know, they're the team that I think will win it, and I think he can play a critical role, not just on the court but in the locker room as well with his personality and the way he is as a bloke. So they're the team that I love seeing win and got my fingers crossed for the season.
Yeah. There's been a couple of fights lately in the NBA, and this is like in team fights. So we had the one with Bones Highland at the Clippers, which shouts to him, VCU VCU guy. I went to VCU for a semester, so Bones is like that one sort of guy out of VCU that I can root for. And then there was also the Minnesota Timberwolves fight recently. Well, it wasn't really a fight; it was a swing. Did you? How do you feel about that? Seeing do you think that's like good? I mean, it's not good for a team, but when there's a bit of passion involved, like there must be like something good about it.
Jeez, you are an optimist, aren't you? If you're going to take good out of that Minnesota situation,
no,
I mean,
bad.
Talk about it, another bad trade. You know, with what the Timberwolves gave up for Gobert was just absolutely unbelievable. And you can see the frustration from the other players. I mean, yep. Reportedly they're saying, go get a block, go get a rebound, go do something for us, please. Yep. And there is a frustration. And, you know, I think sometimes – you know, there's a lot of egos involved. Well, not sometimes. There's always egos involved in the NBA. And they're probably fed up with it and they want more from him and they're trying to challenge him. And then there's the reaction from the other side where there's some frustration as well. So it's just not a great mix in Minnesota right now, even though they were able to get it done this morning, I think.
Yeah, I know, right? It's and Gobert obviously didn't play. He was suspended. So maybe that was, you know, something that brought the team together without him being there. Because I think he's sort of pissed off a few of them. So it's probably, you know, maybe that's helped the Timberwolves, him not being there. You must have been involved in some scuffles in team practices and things like that.
Yeah, early days. I remember at Geelong with a teammate got into a scuffle and actually got into an actual fight at half time behind closed doors.
Really?
Yeah. But after that, I mean, there's always, you know, some disagreements and different things, but never to the stage where you're going to swing on a teammate in a timeout in a game on the court. I mean, that's crazy.
Yeah, I know. That's like next level boiling over. Behind closed doors when you know, maybe tensions are getting a bit in, you know, really full on. But when you're doing it in front of, you know, 13,000 fans and on national TV, it must be like really bad at that point. Who's your pick for the championship at the moment? Are you going?
Yeah, I'm going for Milwaukee. Yeah.
Yep.
I went for them you know, over the last couple of years. And, you know, I thought they were a legitimate chance before Middleton got hurt in the playoffs last year, wasn't it?
So, yeah, yeah.
I just love their balance. You know, I think when you've got a superstar like the Greek Freak that's so passionate and just plays every position like he does, and, you know, a guy that is so good but then goes away in the offseason and just tries to go to another level, I just think it spreads throughout the team. And, you know, I think Middleton's a really good second man. Halliday's great as well. They've got some really good pieces in there. And I think they've got enough offense and defense to be able to get it done.
Brook Lopez somehow has, like, defied age and just become possibly the best big man in the league. He had 9 block shots not that long ago. He's hitting threes. He's like a man on a mission. I haven't seen him this good for, I mean, maybe ever. Like, he might be in, like, career best form.
He had to change his game, didn't he? So he's been able to evolve with the time. And then I think it helps for somebody like him, you know, if he was playing for Detroit, would he be playing the same sort of way? Probably not. But I think when you're around great players and a good system and you can play your role and you find out what that niche is, how you can contribute to winning, then it becomes more enjoyable as well. And I think he's just found that perfect spot.
Yeah. Let's go to Australia in the NBL. So obviously Sydney Kings, back-to-back champions, reasonably good grand final series with the Breakers. I was worried it was going to be a bit of a just a whitewash with them and it'd be a Kings sweep. But the Breakers were really good, a really good matchup for the Kings. What's your thoughts generally on the season gone? You know, I think Sydney were obviously the best team, but apart from that, what did you see?
You obviously had no respect for New Zealand, right?
No.
They were up by 7 with 5 minutes to go in the game to win the whole series. You were worried about a sweep.
I was worried about a sweep. But, you know, they obviously, they were matched up well against the Kings. But, no, I was actively going for the Breakers because of all the cliches of the lead up to this season and what they had to go through last season. And I also just don't really love the Sydney Kings generally. So I was going for the Breakers. But, yeah, I didn't respect them enough, obviously.
Yeah. No, I always thought it was going to be a good series. I actually tipped New Zealand in the series just because I thought they had the athleticism in the front court to be able to compete with the Kings. And I thought the Kings probably would have struggled had Keanu Pinder actually played for Cairns. I think that series would have been completely different if Cairns had a full team. So, you know, the season was incredible. And, I mean, you only have to look at the stats of, you know, the people that watched on TV and the bums on seats and, the evenness of the competition I thought was fantastic this year. And, you know, Larry and Jeremy continue to do a great job of really taking this product to the next level. And, you know, when you add a new franchise, you know, like Tassie coming in and making the playoffs 2 years in a row was a great decision. And, you know, they're planning on more teams coming in and hopefully they can have the same success moving forward with these expansion teams.
Yeah, what do you like? Give us your take on Perth. So obviously, like, because I'm a Perth guy and I loved the Wildcats as a kid, and as I also worked for them, so I think now I'm less of a fan and I just sort of, you know, observe what they do. But it seems like Perth people, and I'm happy to put myself in this, that have this like this feeling that the rest of the country hates us for whatever reason. For someone who doesn't live in Perth or is from not from Perth, how do you see the Perth Wildcats? What do you think of them?
Well, it's not the Wildcats. It's more the fans. I think there's this insecurity, you just said, that you think, you know, I remember commentating a game in Perth, and I commentated for 20 years or so, and when we used to fly around, I remember having a beer with a mate across the road in the pub, and this little guy comes up and he goes, "Why do you hate the Wildcats so much?" And I said, "Mate, do you really think I care who won tonight?" And he's like, "Yeah, you fucking hate the Wildcats." And I was like, "Mate, piss off." I said, "Seriously, do you really think I care who won the game? I have no care. I don't care. I'm just calling the game, mate. I don't hate the Wildcats." You know, but it's amazing how fans can, and I sort of do it a little bit in footy, you know, myself, when I'm listening to commentators, you can hear, take one little thing that a commentator will say, go, "Oh, he hates our team. He hates our team." And you can hear there'll be 10 comments and there might be 8 that are positive. And you say 2 that you think they need to change and they're not doing well enough. And fans and passionate fans jump onto those things and take the narrative that you actually hate their team. And then actually believe it. It blows me away that that actually happens, but it does. And I think Perth, traveling around the country, Perth by far the worst for that, where they think that everybody's against them when in actual fact, but a lot of people don't care. You know what? It's like I say to people, it's like, man, you guys build yourself up too much. The relevance of Perth isn't as big in my mind as you think it is in yours. We don't care. You don't.
You're such a Victorian, honestly. You don't care about us. Don't care about us over here. With the new ownership coming in board, so Hutchie and SEN taking that over, obviously, after Jack Bendat was such a vital piece for the Wildcats and everything that, you know, their success, it must be, I don't know, what do you see from the outside, someone like that coming over, taking over from what they had, and now they've missed the playoffs twice in a row. Like, they got in the play-in, that doesn't count. What do you look at that and be like, the system changing and it will eventually even out, or I don't know, is there what's happening over there?
Well, probably, but I mean, if there's two places you don't want to be an outsider coming in and either taking over an entire program, it's in Perth and it's in Adelaide.
Yeah,
because I feel like if you don't succeed, then you're going to get turned on real quick, real quick. More so than Victoria. Sydney's such a big place. No one really cares in Sydney. Like, if you're doing well, everyone jumps on board and everything else. But there's no fans in any of the sports that are that passionate like you see in Victoria and some of the other states. So he was always at a hiding to nothing. He knew that it was all about SEN and the radio and the media that he was coming in for, and he made that purchase. And then, you know, things haven't really worked out as far as, you know, any sort of success, and to the opposite, where the worst results in the last 35 years, it's really unheard of that Perth could not make the playoffs 2 years in a row. Big challenges for them now and for Mills, because you pick the team, you know, you run with it. And yep. For me, this is probably Danny Mills' last chance, I would have thought, if you failed so badly in the first 2 years. And I think that's probably why they went so hard on Keanu Pinder. They had to, and they probably overpaid because they had to. And it was a slap in the face to lose Luke Travis when you got a young kid that I think will play in the NBA at some stage, got a great talent, to lose a young Western Australian kid that says, if I'm going to succeed, it's not going to be at my hometown. Then that's not a great thing.
Yeah.
But I expect them to bounce back. You know, they've got the money. They'll spend the money. You know, when you've got Bryce Cotton, who, you know, I've always advocated is the best player in the league.
Yep.
I still thought he was the MVP this year. He's just an incredible player and demands so much attention. I thought for Luke Travers, this was the place for him to learn and play off somebody as good as Bryce Cotton. But we'll see how that plays out for him.
Do you think the Ty Webster thing comes into play there? Because I think he's probably second, you know, the second guy that gets the ball in his hands. So if Travers is looking at that and going, I'm probably third, maybe fourth, like that maybe feels for him that he's just not in the right environment to get the ball in his hands as much as he needs.
With it, tell me a team that he's not going to be third, fourth, fifth option.
Yeah.
That has a chance to win a championship. Where is it?
Yeah, nowhere really.
I think if he's the second option on any team, they're not winning the championship.
Yep. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, he needs to
And I think he needs to understand that that's okay too. Like when he goes to the NBA, the NBA teams need to know that he can play a valuable role and play around stars and complement those guys by rebounding, playing great D, being a facilitator, improving his three-point shot, being able to make plays off different guys. That's the easiest role. He hasn't shown that he's ready to be the second best player on any team in the competition that thinks they're making the playoffs. I think sometimes the grass is greener, and, you know, it'll be interesting to see where he ends up and how that goes for him, and whether that's the same as what he thinks he's ready for, or whether he's really that fourth, fifth option like he was in Perth anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess there must be some sort of freedom to that where you have, you know, you just need to go out there and play off others and And because it reminds me of sort of like Nick Kay when he was at the Perth Wildcats. He, like Bryce Cotton and the, I can't remember who the other import at the time was, just always had the ball in their hands. And Nick Kay just got to run amok. He was grabbing rebounds. He's, you know, getting points off putbacks. And to have that role must be, yeah, pretty freeing. So I'm not sure where Luke finds himself there. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see, and I hope he does well. It's been really positive seeing Zave Cooks in the NBA, and obviously the back end of the season, like there's not as much care on games, especially at the Wizards because they're not winning games. But you know he's shown that he can actually contribute, which has been positive. What do you think about Zave Cooks at the Wizards?
Oh, it's great for him. You know, another Aussie to get an opportunity to play in the NBA. I think it's fantastic for the league. And he's a great kid and, you know, comes from a great family. So it's nice for him to have success and see that there's this pathway, you know, from the NBL that's continued to grow. I mean, when I went to the NBA, Luke Longley was the only one that had ever played in the NBA. So it wasn't even something that you thought was an opportunity. Whereas now we've got guys like Luke Travers that are coming through that believe they're going to go to the NBA and probably will. So it's a real positive for our sport.
Yep. Yeah, well, when you went to the NBA after playing in the NBL for a bit, did you, like, because it's a completely different era. There was no, like, social media buzz where, you know, highlights were floating around and people could sort of get to know players. How did that work? Like, how were you being scouted and what was that process like?
Well, mostly through the Olympics. You know, you had to have a big Olympic campaign or World Cup campaign to show that you could play against players, you know, that are at a world class. You know, I remember my agent in 96 before the Olympics was still video cassettes back then. So he's taping off games and, you know, putting highlights together and full games and half games and quarters and then sending them to every NBA team in the hope that you're going to be able to, you know, get there. But, you know, it was more a dream back then than it was a reality. And you're right, the world's so small now. And because we've seen so many players come through the NBL, and because now the Americans realize that the rest of the world can play basketball, they're looking for players outside, you know, of America, and they understand that Aussies are good teammates as well that can really fit a role. And you look at Daly back there at his age and play a minimal role, but realize that there's a real positive for having somebody like him on the squad.
What was that phone call like when you found out the Timberwolves were going to sign you?
Well, I had 6 offers after the Olympics, so right. It was more about working out which team had the biggest interest because all 6 offers were non-guaranteed training squad contracts. And it was working out which team that were most serious that I could get a guaranteed deal with. So it was really the Lakers, Atlanta, and Minnesota. And I went to straight from Atlanta from the Olympics to Summer League with Minnesota, had a 5-day camp and then played in the Summer League games and then came out of that and signed a guaranteed deal.
You got to play in one of the better Timberwolves jerseys. It's funny when I see that jersey that, like, I just think of you wearing it as well. Like, I think of, like, Kevin Garnett and you wearing that jersey. It's iconic. I think they've started to bring it back a little bit, but it is, like, you got to play in one of the best ones.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, I played on that team that was the first team that ever made the playoffs, which sort of hurt me a little bit because the team was so young and I was playing behind Stephon Marbury. And as we got through the season, it looked like we were going to make the playoffs. Then they sort of limited how much rotation on the bench was sort of coming in. So, but it was an exciting time to be there and, you know, seeing Kevin Garnett at 19 and Stephon Marbury, Tom Gugliotta was probably my best mate on the team and he was an all-star and incredible basketball player. So, yeah, it was nice. I learnt so much and, you know, grateful for the opportunity that I didn't ever think I'd get.
Do you remember checking into that first game, what that feeling was like?
I don't remember the first game. I know I played a lot of games early on where and because I was signed for 3 years, they brought in Terry Porter to back up Stephon Marbury because he was still a teenager. So I became the third point guard, and it was the second year that they sort of promised me the backup role.
Yeah.
So it was pretty frustrating in the first year. I played so many games where, you know, I'd come on for a minute or 2 minutes or whatever, and there were times where it was the third quarter and I thought it was the fourth quarter. I got so bored at different stages in that first season. But, yeah, it was eye-opening, and like I said, I appreciated the chance.
Yeah. At that point in like your career, or anyone in a similar sort of boat, when they're really just trying to break into a second spot or trying to make it into the starting team, are you like the cliche is that you're playing as a team and stuff like that, but when you're really trying to break in, do you have to be a bit selfish and show what you can do, or do you just stick to the process and hope that it works out?
No, I mean, you've got to play your role and you've just got to play it really well.
Yeah.
So I knew exactly what that was, and every time I came into the game, sort of knew, you know, what I had to be able to do to help the team, but you're trying to play your role the best you can to help the team. And at the same time, you know, there's a lot of competition. I mean, the difference, you know, between some of these guys averaging 5 points a game versus 10 points a game could be 10 in a year. So yeah, there's no doubt there's a selfish element to the NBA, and, you know, it was a way different mindset. You know, we grew up as a team and you eat together and you room with somebody and everything else. In the NBA, it's all just very, very individual, and everyone's got, you know, the posse that come on the road and hang out. And it was only, I had, some good mates on the team. We spent a lot of time together, but it is a very individual league, you know, most of the time.
Is there NBA cities that you travel to and the guys would get pretty loose?
It's amazing because there's so many games and you're always traveling, and, you know, I don't know how these guys get up for so many games, to be honest. You sort of pick your times in the season about when you're going to go out and when you're going to have a good time. There really wasn't a lot of drinking, you know, like in the NBL growing up, you know, you'd pick your times and you'd go on the road and everyone would go out and have a really big drink and have a lot of fun. But in the NBA, it's a lot different than that, and there's certain times where you get a little bit more of a break in between games and be on the road, and that sort of happens, but certainly not as much.
Yeah, I think there was some like sort of interesting stat I was looking at around teams that are traveling from certain distance to Miami and how poorly they perform when they're playing in Miami, and there's just like the Miami Knights sort of curse that they've gone out the night before or something and they can't really come to play in Miami. What about so you played in the NBA for a bit, then you went back to the NBL. When you left the Timberwolves, did you think you'd have a chance to go back? Was that like something in you that you thought would happen?
No, well, I mean, I had to ask 5 or 6 times to leave the Timberwolves because I was out for 16 weeks with a calf injury, and it's probably one of the only regrets that I really had is that I wanted to come home. But when you got 2 kids under 2 and it's minus 30 degrees and, you know, I was really down at that time because I'd worked so hard to be able to get myself right. I led the summer league, Utah Summer League in assists, started the first 5 games of the exhibition season, and then that's when I just totally obliterated my calf. So it's pretty down, and you know regret that decision. But I ended up spending, you know, 3 years in Europe. Had a great time in Europe. Really fit into the European style of game. It certainly helped my game, and ended up getting another chance to go back to the NBA at a later date. But yeah, probably one of the regrets that I do have.
Got to play under Coach Pop, who's Popovich, who's considered, you know, one of the greatest coaches of all time. Must be a bit of an honour to be able to play under someone like that.
Yeah, no doubt. You know, play alongside guys like Timmy Duncan and Ginobili and Parker and those things. And, you know, I was at the end of my career. I was surprised to actually get an opportunity to go and try out at veterans camp and to then actually make it and then stick, and then I got cut and then they brought me back and then they said to me, you know, we're going to make another move, so we've got a hotel here for you 7 to 10 days and then we'll re-sign you. But I picked up a game to go back to Greece for more money than I was on in the NBA, and I was at the end of my career and I was like, you know, I don't really want to be 12th man. I don't want to sit at the end of the bench and just clap. And but, you know, I love to compete, and, you know, went back to Greece, and I was there 2 days later and playing again in, you know, one of the toughest leagues in the world.
Yeah, those European crowds look crazy as well. They're all, like, packed in on each other. Do you have any good moments that you can recall playing in that league?
Oh, yeah, I mean, heaps. You know, the crowds are so passionate, and, you know, I loved to get the crowds going. And, you know, nothing better than to hear the chants of those huge Greek crowds as you hit a three and they start singing and the drums and all the rest of it. So it's a different mentality, and I'm glad I got the chance to experience lots of, you know, different leagues around the world and countries and things like that. And a kid growing up in Victoria where, you know, basketball wasn't very big, to think that I would have travelled and being able to experience all of those things is something I was very fortunate to have.
You must have gone, well, I assume, I mean, maybe I shouldn't assume, but did you used to go at the opposing crowds? You know, if you'd hit a big shot, would you say stuff to them?
See, I did that everywhere in the world, but not as much in Greece, because it was actually dangerous, the amount of times that riots would start. I mean, the crowd is separated, the fans are separated by riot police that have guns and batons and shields and fences and things like that. So it is very easy to incite some very difficult times. So they spoke to me very, very clearly not to say anything, not to react to players and everything when you go on the road. So it's a little bit hard for me, but I had to learn.
Oh, man, if you were the reason why a riot started, you'd feel pretty bad. So it must have been relatively easy to hold your tongue. Let's just talk quickly before we wrap up. You went and finished your career playing in the NBL, and then you retired, and then you came out of retirement, which, like, I'm not an athlete, but it must be something that athletes think, like, that would be a cool thing to do, like retire and then announce to everyone you're coming back. What was that process like?
Yeah, I'd always thought once I retired, the last game I was going to play was captaining the Sydney Kings championship, first ever championship, and I retired then, and then got the opportunity to go to San Antonio and then Greece and play in another Olympics for Gorgian, and then I retired and said, yeah, now I'm done, shifted to the Gold Coast and was loving life in retirement, and then Mark Cowan from the new team came and offered me a contract, said, will you come back? And I sort of was a little bit intrigued. And then once it got out, I heard people saying, oh, there's no way you could come out of retirement at 36 and actually, you know, compete and play. And that was probably the thing. I said, oh, really? That's, I can't, huh? And then I ended up doing it. So I've been drinking beers for, I didn't drink beer until I was 34 and retired and shipped to the Gold Coast. And as I got the taste of it and then came out of retirement 2 years later.
Wow. There you go. And so then in that season, the coach at the time, it wasn't very long and the coach resigned or fired.
He got sacked.
and you became the coach, the player coach, which seems like a lost art in today's sport. Like I don't know of many players that are doing that anymore. What was that like? And how did that even come about? Did you just put your hand up or did they come to you and ask?
No, they came to me. I think the team was 0-6, and you know it was pretty apparent to everybody involved at the entire club that Mark Price, as nice a guy he was, certainly wasn't cut out to coach, and probably didn't have the passion to do the work that it took. So they came to me and said, "Will you do it? If you're not going to do it, then we're going to find somebody else." He's done, and then I said, "Who are you looking at?" They told me some of the names, and I was like, I didn't come out of retirement to play for them. So I ended up coaching and we turned things around and, you know, went from 0-6 to make the playoffs, which was an incredible run and fun. And then the second year we went even younger again on a small budget, and that certainly wasn't as much fun. And I had surgery during the year and all the rest of it. So it didn't end up a great experience. And there's certain reasons why people aren't playing and coaching. That's because it's difficult and it doesn't work. And we won't ever see it again.
So were you calling subs and stuff while you were on the call? Like who was organising rotations?
Yeah, so no, I'd had an assistant coach that called subs, and we sort of went through that before the game about where we're at. And, you know, you're going to make adjustments as it's going on. But, you know, it was probably the best thing about being a player coach is that when I came off, I could just walk straight up to the bench and then walk back on again without having to wait for a sub. But it was fun. It was tough experience, and then it was really, really tough in the second year.
Yeah, and now you're obviously you've the most recent things you've been doing is coaching. You coached in the WNBL. Is that something that you want to continue to keep doing and like still being involved in basketball?
Yeah, well, I've never stopped being involved in basketball. So I've got an academy here in Sydney called Elite Basketball Development that I've had for 6 years now. So I love coaching the young kids and teaching them the skills and techniques and what it takes to be able to make the next level. So, you know, I'll continue to coach. I've got the basketball show that we just finished our fifth year. That's been, you know, when I first proposed that to people, they said, oh, no, there's no appetite for a basketball show. And now we've just finished our fifth year and, you know, we're getting about 200,000 views a week through KO and News Corp. So, you know, really passionate about that and having a voice and having some fun and giving honest feedback about, you know, what I think. And, you know, Derek Rucker and Joe Healy on that show as well. So, you know, I'll always be involved in basketball just because it's where my passion is. And, you know, I work my daughter out daily and, you know, hope that she continues to grow and get opportunities like I had.
Yeah, for sure. We we spoke probably, would have been 4 or 5 years ago when I was working at the Perth Lynx. I was the media manager there, and that was when Shyla got her first crack at the WNBL. That must have been a pretty proud moment to see your daughter suiting up and playing professionally.
I mean, yes and no. I mean, she, you know, she just played at the World Cup and made the All-Star 5 in the world. So it's sort of when you're going over there and you're seeing her compete on the world stage, she was always going to play in the WNBL. She did when she was 14. And so it was a disappointing year in Perth because she got a stress fracture, you know, the week before the season started and virtually missed the whole season. So, you know, it was nice for her to sort of, you know, get a taste of it again. You know, had some talented players on that team. But just disappointing with the injury. And but, you know, I think now, you know, she's got to the stage now she's going to go overseas. She won't be playing in the WNBL next season. And looking forward to her understanding of European basketball and continuing to take another step forward and, you know, hopefully playing for the Opals next year.
Yeah, I recall just watching her in a cast, just sort of hobbling up and down the court, just doing dribbling drills by herself because, you know, she was obviously just desperate to get out there and just would just spend hours just dribbling and working on her handles just all in a cast. It was funny to watch.
Well, I think she was only 16 or something like that at the time. But, yeah, it was more disappointing because she was ready to play.
Yeah.
She was really ready to be able to contribute. And I know Andy Stewart had high hopes for what she was going to be able to deliver for them. So, you know, it's just as a pro athlete, you learn to, you know, understand there's going to be ups and downs, and that was certainly one of the downs. And, you know, she's had other downs through her career already for someone 21.
Yep.
She's played 100 games in the WNBL but had some real highs and some lows and some things she's had to navigate through that will continue to make her stronger for the rest of her career.
Yeah, for sure. We'll finish up. I've got a couple of questions that people have sent in. First one is this. Who's the best player you've played with and why is it Andrew Gaze?
Well, I mean, Drewy was unbelievable to play with. And, you know, I played 3 of my 4 Olympics with him and he's a legend of our sport. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, there's no one more passionate and hardworking than Drewy and wears his heart in his sleeve. So, yeah, Drewy from an Australian standpoint, but, you know, I was very fortunate to play with some of the names that I've said, you know, with Kevin Garnett and Tim Duncan, some of these guys that are absolute sort of legends of the world game as well.
Yeah, one of the things I the funny things I love about Andrew Gaze is the how the NBL brought in an award called the NBL Most Efficient Player Award. And he won it from its, you know, first year, and he won it 8 years in a row. So they just stopped giving it out because he just kept winning it.
Yeah, well, I mean, his numbers were Bradman-like. It was, I mean, it was incredible when you can average 40 something points in a game, and the whole game plan is to be able to shut him down. And you know, I played on Drewy every time we played against them, and you know, it was always a really successful night for me. If you could hold him in the 20s just because of, you know, what he was capable of being able to do and the whole offense is run around him and all the rest of it, but he was a freak.
Yeah. One more question. What is the Olympic Village like? You've got to experience a few of those. Was it? I've just heard stories, but, you know, it's all rumor and speculation.
Well, the Olympic Village was different. All 4 of my Olympics was very different, but you know, you probably hear stories more from the swimmers that compete for the first week and then as basketballers that, you know, we play on the first day and you go all the way to the last day. So you're totally focused on what you're doing and getting ready and recovering and all the rest of it. And then you see, you just start hearing all the athletes start partying as the, as the 2 weeks goes on and people, you know, drop out or have success and they just enjoy it. So, we certainly had a couple of days at the end of each Olympics where we had a chance to be able to enjoy ourselves and get amongst it.
One more from me before I let you go. Obviously, you're a big part of Australian basketball on the Olympic stage. What was it like for you seeing the Aussies finally get a medal?
It was emotional. I was just so proud of the guys and, you know, having a big affiliation with Gorge and guys like Joe Ingles to be able to get it done. And, you know, so many people had come before them and got close, and we'd finished fourth twice. And felt like we were right there to be able to do it, and for these guys to be able to persist, and for those NBA guys to, you know, really sacrifice so much every year to be, stay part of it and bring young guys in. It was really emotional. I was working for Sunrise during those 2 weeks and staying up every night, and I ended up staying up having some drinks, celebrating on my own because the family had gone to bed. And even though I had to be up at 5 the next morning, I was certainly a bit croaky the next morning and went in a proud ex-boomer.
Yeah, so good. Well, Shane, thanks for chatting to us and catching us up on, you know, NBA, NBL stuff as well. Backchat_basketball on Instagram is where you can find us, or you can send us an email, hello@backchatpodcast.com.au. We'll check in with you again in the future, Shane. Good luck to the Bucks. Hopefully they get some victories, and please just, you know, pour one out for my Dallas Mavericks, and maybe we can do something next season.
Maybe we should throw a big prayer out and hope that your Wildcats can get back to the playoffs.
Very good. Thanks, Shane.
Good on you, mate.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
That episode from Backchat Studios lives on the Acast Creator Network. If you want to sign up as a patron or access all of our merch, head to backchatpodcast.com.au.